number 21-1634, Kauffman v. Microsoft. What is the plan here for the appellee and cross-appellant? Normally, under our rules and practice notes, we only allow one counsel to argue for each party. What is the proposal here, Mr. Abramson? Can you tell us what's going on here?
Your Honor, the proposal was there's an appeal, Microsoft's appeal, yeah. And then there's a cross appeal on the interest of prejudgment interest. And the proposal was that my partner, Mr. Patchen, would argue the portion having to do with the cross appeal for, would argue the cross appeal for Kauffman.
Okay, well, normally that's not permissible to have two parties argue for a single party. We'll allow it this morning. I think what we'll do is we'll separate the argument on the main appeal and the cross appeal. We'll do 10 minutes on the main appeal, and then when that's done, we'll come back and do the cross appeal. But in the future, you should not do that.
Understood, Your Honor.
All right.
Thank you.
All right, so let's do the main appeal first. Ms. McCulloch. So 10 minutes aside on the main appeal, and then we'll have a separate clock. Please adjust the clock so it's 10 minutes. Okay. Go ahead.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. The District Court's judgment of infringement depended on two independent claim construction errors. If either error is corrected, the judgment should be reversed based on the undisputed operation of the accused dynamic data software. I'd like to start with the automatically generating language from the claim preambles and the issue of whether this language requires the method as a whole to be automatic or whether it permits a merely partially automatic method.
Well, I don't see that you asked the district court to construe this term so that it met what you're arguing on appeal. Where did you propose that construction here?
Thank you, Your Honor. We propose this construction repeatedly, and I think it is helpful to start it.
Well, that won't do. You got to show me one place where you proposed a specific construction that coincides with what you're arguing here now.
So one place, and I have a number of record sites I can propose, Your Honor, is at Appendix 2997 and 98 and 2984, which is during the summary judgment hearing.
Did you say 2997?
2997, Your Honor. And one place is at lines 20 through 22. This is counsel for Microsoft who says, from start to finish, the only thing that was supposed to happen in the patent is to identify a database. No other steps, no other user interfaces were supposed to be presented to the user except that final step.
Okay,
and on the next
where
page...
Do you, okay, go ahead.
What about on the following page? Don't you enter or make a stipulation that you're now trying to get out of?
Not at all, Your Honor. There is no dispute that the term automatically, standing alone, means no separate developer input is required. That term, standing alone, was construed and is not disputed on appeal. The issue that is disputed and that was not resolved is shown right above that. And you can see this on that same page, Your Honor, cites 2998, starting at line 8, where the judge said, I can't tell you who is right, whether there's contemplated a human selection that will then cause an automatic generation, or whether everything has to be automatic. A few pages earlier, if you look at...
Wasn't that resolved that, to mean no separate developer input?
Is required.
Right.
So that is the resolved meaning of the term automatically standing alone. What the court said he was not resolving is whether everything had to be automatic, the scope of automatic, whether automatic generation limits the method as a whole, or whether it can be isolated and applied only to the three recited
steps. Did you make
steps.
That argument below?
We did, Your Honor.
In this summary judgment hearing, this hearing that we're talking about now?
That's exactly right. So here, and you can look in the briefing as well, Your Honor. So in our opening brief at pages 20, 83, and 84, we raised this issue. And one to step back a little bit, I think it's helpful
the
to remember.
The issue that you're saying is we should read this as asking for construction that everything is automatic except the selection step?
No, Your Honor, everything is automatic, period, full stop. This, by the way, is language that was proposed initially by Mr. Kaufman.
It says the only thing that was supposed to happen in the patent is to identify a database. That sounds like selecting a database.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So is my statement correct? That your argument is everything has to be automatic except the selection of a database?
That is correct, Your Honor, because that is what starts the method. The method for automatically generating an interface, an end user interface for a database, requires a database to generate an interface for. This is language Mr. Kaufman used.
So if let's assume for the moment that that was the requested claim construction and that that's what the claim construction should be, but why aren't the steps we're talking about here falling within the category of selecting a database?
So there is no dispute, Your Honor, that if the method as a whole is required to be automatic, dynamic data does not infringe. There is a separate dispute if you limit the scope of automatically to just the isolated three steps recited in the body. There is a separate dispute as to whether even the scanning step is automatically performed. We've explained why it is not. But the larger claim construction issue, Your Honor, is whether automatically applies to limit the method as a whole. And that is what Mr. Kaufman said was true to the PTAB.
Your argument is that because it's a comprising claim, I'm trying to understand what the claim construction issue is. You're saying because this is a comprising claim, the claim shouldn't reach, the automatically requirement should include things other than the listed steps in the patent, right?
Well, so I think, Your Honor, the misperception in the red brief is that it is not contingent on the word comprising. Comprising, in a sense, is a little bit beside the point to the claim construction.
I'm just trying to
understand
what the argument is. I mean, I understand that there's certain specific steps that have to be performed here, which, as I understand it, the district judge found could fall within the selecting category, and the jury could find infringement because the non-automatic steps fell into selecting, correct?
Correct.
So why, what's wrong with that first?
What's wrong with that, Your Honor, is that the district court's determination there was premised on an interpretation of automatically that applied only to those three steps, as opposed to the method as a whole. I think one way to clarify the issue, Your Honor, is to look at...
I don't understand what you just said.
Okay, I apologize.
The district judge said these steps, which are not performed automatically, could be found by the jury to fall into the selecting category. And therefore, not being within the claim, right?
That is correct, Your Honor. But he said that's because the jury was able to find that the other admittedly non-automatic parts of the method of generating an interface using the dynamic data software, those were not part of the three claimed steps.
You gave up that argument. I can see that the court is saying, I can't tell who's right. Whether there's a contemplated, a human selection that itself will cause an automatic generation of some function or some other result, which is what you're arguing here, the three element source or something else. So the judge is looking, what do we do here? And you come up with the word automatic and you say that you've agreed on a definition. And that means no separate developer impact input occurs. And you don't come back later on and try to cure that.
This
lack of arguing the claim scope, once you have the construction down, then the issue became the scope of that construction. And I don't see where you argued that.
So we did argue this,
Your Honor. In terms of claim construction and in terms of automatic.
So again, these are separate and perhaps nested issues, though, Your Honor. The meaning of the word automatically standing alone, that was agreed. The scope of what automatically applied to, did it modify generating a user interface, or did it modify only the three recited steps?
You keep saying standing alone. Do you mean that? I mean, is that the construction, automatic standing alone, or just the word automatic and nothing else?
Just the word automatically is all that the court construed, Your Honor.
Right. And that word was construed to mean no developer input.
That's correct. And the unresolved issue was whether everything had to be automatic.
Can I just ask you, can you be concrete about what steps in the overall process of generating a user interface, have you pointed to that might not be under causing the server to scan, which I think probably includes, but probably is not limited to selecting the database. What concrete steps do you think fall within the more general phrase in the preamble that might not be in the front of Clause B?
Your Honor, do you mean in connection with the accused process? What steps of the accused process did not fall into that?
That would be one way of describing it, right? Because we don't insist on claim constructions or even get to claim constructions as to which there is no concrete evidentiary dispute. And I'm trying to understand, it seems to me roughly, and I'm sure you disagree with this, but that your three-page list of things the developer has to do, turn a false to a true or a true to a false, change, you know, do a couple of uncommentings and add a line to say, go here and use this, that you want to say, and that's all has to do with the front end of the B limitation, whether that is actually the scanning or it's actually the causing, and which is, an, I think, another way of putting it is what Judge Hellerstein said, it's all selection. I think it may not be all literally selection, but it probably is all causing the server. So if, but you're insisting that we not look only at B or A, B, or C, that we look to other steps that must be part of the preamble creating the user interface. And I'd like just even one example of what such a step is that you're talking about.
Well, so two things, Your Honor, if I may. One very concrete and easy step, and one that Dr. Shasha testified to at 34, 17, and 18, is that after he had pointed the software to the database, to the AdventureWorks database in his testimony, he had to then go manually open a new program, Entity Framework, which came up with a wizard. And you can actually see screenshots of the wizard in our appendix at 6892 and 2163.
Aren't those the same things that we've been talking about as where the judge found that they fell within the selectings step, which is outside of the claim?
Well, and this...
In other words, I have the same puzzlement that Judge Toronto has. Is what are we arguing about? I mean, you've identified a set of steps that the judge, rightly or wrongly, as I understand it, said fell within the selecting step and not the creation of the user interface step. And there's a question as to whether those are properly within the claim such that you don't infringe. But what are there other steps that we're talking about that would be excluded hear from the claims if we said, well, it automatically is not limited to A, B, and C, but includes some other things. Are there other things besides these, if we call them selecting items, that would fall then within the claim if you gave it the broad automatically construction?
Yes, Your Honor. And I think it might be helpful just to remember that this restriction came from Mr. Kaufman's own statements to the PTAB when he distinguished the prior art. He gives a good example that I will use.
Are there other things? I mean, I'm trying to ask a different version of, or the same question that Judge Toronto has. If we put aside these selecting items, what would have been characterized as selecting items that we were talking about earlier, are there other steps that you say have to be performed automatically that aren't within A, B, and C, and if so, what are they?
So yes, Your Honor. Concretely, if we're looking at the accused process, everything from start to finish needs to be performed automatically. And that would include, in addition to what we've discussed already, the process where the generated data model is recognized and accessible to the server. Dr. Shasha testified that it was not. He had to go in,
change
the code.
Does that include the scanning process?
This is after what Dr. Shasha talked about the scanning process was after it completed. So the scanning process, as relied upon by Dr. Shasha, was the clicking of a finish button. And that caused a data model to be generated. but the data model wasn't accessible to the server. What Dr. Shasha said was that he had to go back to the dynamic data software, change code.
Okay,
and
that falls into the category of what I was talking about. It's falling within the selecting step, which is arguably outside the scope of the claims. And in other words, this has to do with the accessibility of the database. Is there something beyond that? I mean,
yes, Your Honor. After that, Dr. Shasha testified that the scaffolding feature, actually the accused functionality of dynamic data, that wasn't even turned on. He had to additionally edit 4 more lines of code.
I view that as falling within this selecting category that I was talking about before. And that seems to me what the district judge addressed it as being. He said there are all these things that fall within the selecting or accessibility or whatever that don't have to be performed automatically.
Well,
is there anything else is the question?
Those are the non-automatic steps that were shown in the record, Your Honor. But the larger issue is whether that is a method as a whole that is automatic, and it is not. It's indisputably not. Mr. Kaufman does not dispute that if automatically qualifies the method as a whole, as it did in Bio-Rad, as it did in Eli Lilly, then dynamic data is not an automatic process for generating an end user interface. So again, Your Honor, I think this is in the context of the substantial evidence issue, the factual issue, but the claim construction issue is a different one. It is, what does automatically apply to? It is an adverb. It modifies the generation of the end user interface. And Mr. Kaufman, when he was describing his patent for purposes of invalidity to the patent office, said, my invention requires a plug and play software where a developer does nothing beyond point the software to a database of interest and turn it on. He said that is why it's different from these prior art methods that were partially automated, that used things like wizards, like the Entity Framework Wizard. That's why in my specification, I said the difference between what I am claiming and what the prior art did is that it had things like wizards and tools that helped a developer automate the process. But mine does it fully automatically without any custom programming.
Would you agree that this argument that you just made, the provenance of it is the construction of the word automatic?
I don't think the provenance
because
of it.
Because it sounds to me like you're arguing claim scope of construction of automatic.
That's correct, Your Honor. What automatic applies to?
Yes. And that is what I don't see in the record as you supplementing the claim construction during trial or objecting during trial when you saw that the jury was going astray or perhaps arguments of opposing counsel were intruding into this area that you're talking about now.
Your Honor, the summary judgment hearing was also the pretrial hearing. So the pretrial hearing is where the court said, I'm not going to resolve this. I can't tell you whether the whole thing needs to be automatic. At 4101 of the appendix, that's our oral 50A motion, and counsel raised this in a somewhat cursory fashion because the district court cut them off a little bit, but raised it at the oral 50A motion, and then we raised it again in our 50B motion.
That's too late when you get to the rule. You got to raise it pre-trial. I mean, Rule 51 dealing with jury instructions requires you to specifically raise objections to jury instructions, and if you want an instruction, to specifically request it. We've said in the patent context that can be satisfied by claim construction requests earlier in the proceeding, for example, at Markman. But I don't think the cases support the notion that you can come up with a new claim construction in a Rule 50 motion.
And again, Your Honor, it was not a new claim construction.
No.
We asked for this.
That's another question, but you're pointing to the Rule 50 request. That seems to me that's too late.
But that was not the first time we raised this, Your Honor. We raised this at 2997 and 98, and the court said, I cannot resolve this. I can resolve the collateral issue of what automatically means standing alone, but I can't tell you whether everything has to be automatic.
But see, at that time when the court said that, and you could tell by the language that the court is pondering the issue, you agreed to the construction of automatic, and now you're stuck by the claim scope of that construction. But you never sought to clarify. You never argued that automatic should be construed, the scope of automatic should be construed in the following manner. until too late. Trial was over.
So, Your Honor, we did, respectfully. That is the exact issue that we argued at 2997 and 98. A few pages earlier, I think at 84, the judge asked us, are you building counsel to an argument? Because again, this was a summary judgment hearing as well as a pretrial hearing, that dynamic data doesn't infringe because everything, absolutely everything, is not automatic.
The court asked you, you agreed on a definition. Answer, I think we have resolved it, the court. No separate developer impact occurs. Microsoft counsel says input, corrects the court. No separate developer input is required, says the court. Then Mr. Wu says, all right, and then you go on to other things. And that's okay, but you can't come back later on and say that the construction of automatic extends in this manner. I mean, now you're arguing you're in the field of the claim scope of that construction, and that's what I don't see that you clarified or brought up in an appropriate manner.
Well, again, Your Honor, my understanding of this exchange is that there were two nested issues. One was what automatically meant, viewed in isolation.
I understand that, but you, right there, Mr. Wilson said, yes, automatic. And by the way, there's two different methods here that we're looking at, or he should have extended the argument, but that didn't happen.
I think that in retrospect, certainly we could have been more explicit. We viewed the explicit statement from the court.
This is, all the parties agree that this is a stipulation, correct?
That's correct. But the issue of whether everything has to be automatic was a separate issue. And the court expressly said, I can't tell you who is right. Okay. I'm not going to resolve that today. We raised it again at 4104 in our oral 50A motion. We raised it in our 50B motion, and there was no allegation of waiver in the response. So under Gronowski and similar cases, any allegations of waiver, we maintain are incorrect based on repeatedly raising this for the court, but any allegations of waiver are themselves waived.
Can I ask you a question on a different topic?
Please.
Is your argument that even though your and or construction that you proposed would in fact apply to no embodiment in the spec, nevertheless, the language is so clear in you don't have the and or construction, obviously, you mean the conjunctive and, that even though that would not apply to any embodiment in the spec, the language compels adoption of that. Or do you disagree with the premise? Is there something in the spec that says that supports that construction?
So I think Your Honor is maybe 90% correct, 90% accurate in terms of what our argument is. We start from a place where and means and, right? That's what MedGraph says, unless something in the specification compels a disjunctive construction. In the spec, repeatedly, three times, it uses that same and language. It doesn't ever say and or, doesn't say or. It says representing, managing, and navigating in the abstract, in column 3, in column 12. There is one disclosed embodiment. There's really just one in the specification. And it's correct that it doesn't expressly disclose a retrieve mode. It doesn't disclose a delete mode display at all, but it doesn't expressly disclose a retrieve mode display that has managing capabilities. But this was language that was added during prosecution by the patentee to overcome the prior art. And he used that same and language. So he's limited by the language that he chose. There isn't a compelling portion of the specification that compels a modification to a disjunctive meaning.
But wouldn't the embodiment be outside the claim if you gave it the construction and the construction that you're giving it now?
I think you're right, Your Honor, that it does not expressly disclose the managing capability. This isn't a situation where it would be incompatible or inconsistent with the claim. Dr. McGovern talked about how a person of skill in the art would find it trivial to incorporate this functionality into the disclosed retrieve mode display.
Right,
but you're right
that
there's no disclosed.
There's triviality of doing it, and there's also what is separate, senselessness of doing it. And I took the point, maybe even that you kind of agree when you said, well, anyway, that it doesn't make any sense until I think your reply brief. You don't, I think, offer a scenario in which you say, well, even in the, is it the delete mode or the retrieve mode, one of those two, it might make sense to have a little bit of management in there.
And I think, Your Honor, that the district court found that it made less sense, not that it made no sense. But it certainly would be trivial. It wouldn't break anything if you were to incorporate management functionality into the retrieve mode display. But again, Your Honor, this was language that was added during prosecution to overcome the prior art. So to the extent it does diverge from a disclosed embodiment, that was up to the patent owner to decide.
All right. Unless there are further questions, I think we're out of time. We'll give you 2 minutes for rebuttal, Mr. Abrams.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court. The issues that are raised here, two of them expressly noted as claim construction issues, and a third issue, which goes to sufficiency of the evidence, but on just one portion of that method claim, step B. But as to the claim construction issues, the first one that they raise on automatically was not properly preserved for appeal. The district court's decision on the Rule 50B motion was quite clear right at the very start of it was I instructed the jury that automatically meant no separate developer input is required, and the parties agreed. He just recites that. So it would be anomalous to come back and tell the district court you erred by...
Well, what do you make of what, at least this morning, is the heart of Microsoft's point, the colloquy at 2997 to 98?
Yeah.
Are you saying that's just not clear enough to have put Judge Hellerstein on notice that there were actually 2 points being disputed and not one?
Well, if you read the pages coming up to that, counsel, one of them being me, and then counsel from Microsoft, vigorously argued about pushing that further, whether it's going to be to expressly instruct the jury that, oh, yes, and automatically applies to everything done from start to finish. And on the other hand, well, no, it actually applies to the recited steps, steps A and B. And the judge said, you know, I'm not comfortable leaning your way or leaning my way. I can't tell you who's right. And then Microsoft's counsel says, can we resolve the claim construction issue? And then, you know, which one? Automatic. You agreed on a definition. I think we resolved it. No separate developer impact occurs, Microsoft's counsel.
Right, but I think Microsoft's version of this, Ms. McCullough's version, is that until the can we resolve the claim construction issue, the lines reciting what the district court said just before that, said, I'm not going to resolve this scope question. And at which point, I think the version is, Mr. Wolf says, okay, we're done with that. I've lost it. He understands it. He rejects it. Now on to the next thing.
Correct.
So why is the material before that enough to have preserved the issue? And I'm
because
putting aside whether this issue matters.
Because they gave it up. They gave it up right then and there. They said, you know what? We're going to go with no separate developer input is required because on its face, that applies to everything anyway. We're going to go with that. And I, you know, from Kaufman's standpoint, it was the same thing. It's like, you know, that's good enough. We can try the case on that. And that was agreed. This is, I think, as clear as this is an agreement. And Microsoft in its reply brief here concedes that was an agreement. The judge characterized it as an agreement. So,
it seems that the agreement was on a definition. If I read this correctly, then it was on the definition of the word automatic. And having a definition of that one word does not necessarily mean that you have resolved the claim construction issue.
Because to the extent that it is an issue. But if
well, attached to here, I mean, what we're arguing later is the scope of the definition that was stipulated to. And I see throughout the throughout the case and through other arguments here, there seems to be question as to whether the parties actually stipulated or agreed on or the court resolved the claim scope issue.
The claim on its face says a method for automatically generating a user interface for a relational database. Now, if the agreed instruction is automatically means no separate developer input is required.
I don't think the claim actually says that. I think you may be giving more than you need to. It says a method for operating a server that includes a processor for doing that. And then it specifies the three steps of operating the server. The steps of operating the server don't have to be automatic.
Yes, Your Honor. Forgive me for not having the exact language of the claim in front of me as I answered that question. Yes, the method comprising automatically generating an end user interface. Automatically generating an end user interface. So generating an end user interface wherein in doing that, no separate developer input is required. I think a jury understands that to mean the process is supposed to not require.
Can I ask you, I guess this is intended to be, you know, the same question that we were talking about earlier at the beginning of the argument with Ms. McCullough. Judge Hellerstein saw, and maybe Microsoft's brief here lists, an assortment of actions that the developer takes when using the Microsoft software. And one way of characterizing all of that is that that's all setting up the action of the server on the relevant database to do the scanning and the model creation and the representation and all of that, and not anything else. And so I guess I remain quite confused about why there is anything else concretely at issue here in this argument about other steps in, soup to nuts creation are in the preamble that a claim construction dispute would have to be resolved to address.
I would agree with that. I don't think there is. That's what it comes down to. That's what Judge Hellerstein found in his decision. There are no other steps required. Coming into it, you tell it which, and you only have to do this the first time you use the tool, by the way. There's testimony in the record that every time you use the tool after that, you don't necessarily have to do any of this because you already have that file that you've edited the first time.
Well, I guess the argument is this, that if the judge had instructed the jury that everything except the database selecting step has to be done automatically, that the jury might have concluded that some of these steps that are done manually in the Microsoft embodiment don't fall within the category of selecting, and they might have come up with a different verdict. I mean, that seems to me to be the clearest way of saying this.
I understand that, Your Honor. There is nothing else. There is nothing else that's required.
But that's not, that you're not addressing my concern. My concern is that the judge said, here's some steps that are taken manually in the Microsoft product that fall within the category of selecting. So they don't have to be performed automatically. If the jury had been instructed the way Microsoft seems to be arguing, that everything has to be done automatically except selecting, the jury might have concluded that those steps that we're talking about, those additional manual steps, fell outside of the selecting category and therefore had to be performed automatically. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yes, but we would argue that the preparatory step. In other words, telling the software which database that it had to operate on is not part of the, it can't be construed as part of the method. That's before you perform the method. Things that happen before you perform a claim method aren't part of the claim method.
Is what you're saying that as a matter of law, there would be harmless error in failing to give the instruction that I'm talking
Your
about?
Honor,
because there's no way that you could find that these were things other than selecting?
Yes, Your Honor.
And you don't really mean before you perform the method. The only thing that has to be automatic is what the server does. So that you, sitting in front of the developer, is not required, is not covered by this automatic requirement. All about getting all of the right inputs and application software together. And it seems to me your argument is that each of the human elements or human actions that Microsoft, this is, I think, your argument, that every one of the human actions taken is part of getting the server ready to use the correct software applied to the correct database.
Yes, we would agree with that, Your Honor.
And it's only that application, what the server does, that has to be automatic.
We would agree with that.
Okay, we're out of time. Anything else?
And I will tell you, I've attempted to find a linguistic opening in the claim, and right now I haven't found one. If this would be a good opportunity for you to say, here's how it's our argument actually has a linguistic opening in the claim, putting aside your argument that this can't possibly be right because it doesn't make enough sense and it would be different from the spec.
Yeah, and it's just like the case law that there's the case law that we cited that looks at similar language and says, you know, is it whether it's disjunctive or not can be overridden by strong contextual evidence, which is what we have, which is that's of a fact, actually of a factual nature. But
the whole argument is that this is inconsistent with the specification because it would exclude embodiments that are described in there, right?
There's a little more to the argument. So the argument is also the way the claim is written, the and construction is within the clause, is within a subclause for representing, navigating, and managing, that the and, if you want to interpret it as conjunctive, allows us to specify the set of operations that are within the processes. That the literal language of the claim says that each said display mode integrates processes. What are the processes? The and informs us of the set of processes. So it's conjunctive in that sense. And there's also the further factor, the and really is meaningful because the set of processes, the representing, navigating, and managing, it's our position consistently throughout this case, must be performed within that set of display modes. All three of those processes must be conformed. So and has meaning in the sense that taken together, they all have to perform them. But the claim itself does not say that not only that each mode integrates processes, but that each mode integrate processes for each and every one of representing, navigating, and managing. That's our linguistic argument on that.
Okay. And there is record. We're out of time, then.
Yeah, there is record evidence on the all three have to be there among those modes.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Abrams.
Thank you.
I'll have 2 minutes.
A
Thank you, Your Honors. I want to just start with Judge Toronto's last question, which, and I apologize for misparaphrasing, but something along the lines of, is pointing the software to a database and then telling the software what additional software it needs to use to create an end-user interface, is that all appropriately part of the selecting? And to Your Honor's point, would that then have been harmless error if a construction were in fact given? That is exactly contrary to what Mr. Kaufman told the PTAB his invention was in his patent owner preliminary response. He said, automatically generating means it's all done by a machine. It's all done by a server. You trigger it as a developer. You point it to a database and you tell it to turn on. And that is all a developer has to do. That is what he told the patent office. And I think that's similar to what we just heard, that there isn't a dispute that automatically on its face applies to everything, applies to the entire process of generating an end user database. And that exactly is our argument, Your Honor. There is no dispute that if the claim means what it says, if automatically generating an end user database means automatically generating the database, dynamic data does not infringe. There's extensive manual input at all parts of the process. And that is my last word on the automatically argument, Your Honors, unless you have further clarifications. Thank you.
Okay, you're done? Thank you very much. All right, now we'll do the cross appeal. Mr. Patchen, so set it for 5 minutes, please. Go ahead.
May it please the Court, and thank you, Your Honor, for giving me the opportunity to argue this before you today. There are a few things with respect to prejudgment interest that both sides and the Court agreed upon. One, prejudgment interest is ordinarily awarded in patent infringement cases. Two, the hypothetical negotiation that took place between the parties would have been in February 2011. So really, there are two questions at issue. One, did the jury's damages calculation somehow include prejudgment interest from 2011
to 2020? That you're correct, that the jury wasn't asked to address the prejudgment interest question. There's this alternative theory that there was unreasonable delay and prejudice. Could you address that?
Certainly, Your Honor. There was, and that's the second question, was there undue delay or prejudice? And the Court respectfully was incorrect and abused its discretion in reaching that conclusion that there was undue delay. The court found
5 years pretty long time to bring suit.
Yes, Your Honor, there are cases that have found shorter periods and longer periods. However, the case law is clear that mere delay alone is not sufficient.
You've got to have prejudice.
There has to be prejudice.
And so they say, well, we might have done a workaround if we'd known about this earlier.
That's correct. There are two reasons that the court found for prejudice. One, the delay created more interest. Again, the case law is clear that is not sufficient to be the prejudice. The second reason is as you said, they might have done a workaround. However, the record is also clear they didn't actually ever do a workaround, not in 2011, not in 2016, not by 2020 at the time of the trial. If they really believed that it was that they were trying to avoid prejudice and trying to address that issue, they would have done the workaround later. Now, the reason why the workaround issue was presented to the court and the jury was not because they were trying to address prejudgment interest. They were trying to argue that that workaround was a non-infringing alternative, sufficient to reduce effectively what the damages were. There was testimony that was not an acceptable workaround, and in fact, the jury issued an award for $7 million, not this $10,000 that Microsoft said it would cost to do the workaround. It's clear that that workaround was not truly prejudicial. And $10,000 for Microsoft is also not that much money. They could have, if it was truly prejudicial, they would have made the change in 2016. They didn't. They did it in 2020. Microsoft's policy is they don't like to break their products because they don't want to make their customers angry. And there's evidence in the record on that point.
So would one way of I guess what I'm hearing about your prejudice point, that, or at least the point that's registering with me, is that the district court's finding of prejudice, to the extent it was based on a missed opportunity to avoid infringement by changing the product, is essentially inconsistent with the jury's finding of no non-infringing alternative.
That's correct, Your Honor. Okay. And the fact also that they didn't, Microsoft itself didn't implement it, is further evidence that there was no prejudice. If immediately upon filing the lawsuit, Microsoft had shortly thereafter done the workaround, it would have shown that the delay could have caused prejudice. The fact that they hadn't, and 5 years after filing, is evidence that that was not going to be a way for them to avoid prejudice. So there's just no factual underpinning to support that conclusion.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Patchen. We'll give you a minute for rebuttal. Ms. McCulloch.
Thank you, Your Honors. This is an issue that's reviewed for abuse of discretion.
Okay, but I don't see where there's any testimony on this prejudice question that they would have done the workaround if they filed suit earlier. Putting aside whether the workaround would have been non-infringing, it's just all he says is it's possible to do it. It would have cost $10,000. There's no testimony that he says, well, if they'd sued earlier, we would have done the workaround and avoided the problem.
So, Your Honor, the court cited that testimony, and I think it does go a little farther than maybe we could have. Scott Hunter, Microsoft's engineer, testified that...
Where do they say they would have done it?
I don't see that testimony.
So at Appendix 3751, Mr. Hunter said, we would use the same tech to block the EF design, the entity framework design. That's how they would have done it. There is other testimony that uses the could language. Your Honor is correct about that. But it was not clear error.
Where does he say if they'd sued earlier, we would have done it?
So he is not specifically testifying in the context of a prejudgment interest inquiry. Your Honor is right about that. He's testifying in the context of what Microsoft could have done in 2011 had they been informed.
The would there is how.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Yeah, not that it would have actually done it.
That's correct. And again, this was in the context of an invalidity issue, not in the context of a prejudgment interest issue. But if we're talking about what the court was in its discretion to find, looking at the evidence of record, it can't be said to be clear error for the court to have found that if Microsoft had been aware of this issue of the alleged infringement in 2011.
They would have done it, but the court doesn't say that. So they might have done it or could have done it, something like that.
And the inability to be given
right?
that...
I mean, the court does not say they would have done it, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Yeah.
But the court said that the inability for Microsoft to have that choice, that was the prejudice. It was not clear error to make that finding. And there was an indisputed 5-year delay, undue delay, that the court found. The combination of that finding of prejudice and the finding of clear error appropriately underpinned the court's denial of the motion for prejudgment interest. And I will say one more thing, that the allegation of 2016 being the relevant time and that as of 2016, no design around was made, that somehow undermines Microsoft's position. The usage for dynamic data had fallen to almost nothing in 2016. There's a stipulation of usage less than 800 users a month in Appendix 3845. So if Microsoft had been given the opportunity in 2016 to make a design around, it would have had no impact. All of the damages would have been in hindsight. So there is no inconsistency with Microsoft not having a design around made in 2016 when usage was essentially zero.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Patchen, you have a minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. Again, the court found two reasons for denying prejudgment interest. One, the interest accruing over the delay. That's incorrect as a matter of law. That taken along with the fact that there was no prejudice makes this further an abuse of discretion. If it had been simply one or the other, it's one thing. But here, you take them as a whole. The judge abused his discretion to find one basis incorrect as a matter of law, two, prejudice. There's no evidence, as we've discussed, there was nothing to support that conclusion that Microsoft actually was prejudiced as a result of the delay. and that's what's required. You must have prejudice for there to be no prejudgment interest. Mere delay alone is not sufficient.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Panchin. All right, that concludes our arguments in Kaufman. Thank both counsel. I thank all three counsel. The case is submitted.